places, everyone.
We're now broadcasting.
Roll the tape in. 3, 2.
A new audio drama.
Appaloosa Radio is where stories come alive.
Murder at the Gas Pump. An original audio story for Appaloosa Radio. Coughlin, California has three gas stations. The ultra-modern Chevron sits on the south edge of the town, ready to service the customers coming off the major freeway. The less-than-modern Shell station, which still has bays for oil changes and minor repairs. And the four pumps at the Log Cabin Liquor and Gas. Years ago, the Log Cabin Liquor and Gas sold Exxon gasoline, but those days passed a couple of decades ago. Today, Log Cabin Liquor and Gas sells an independent brand that could come from any of the refineries. No one knows which. Of course, gas is always cheaper at the Log Cabin. No credit cards accepted. Cash only. What few outsiders realize is that the same family owns both the less-than-modern Shell station and the Log Cabin Liquor. Opinder Singh owns the Shell station. In the Punjab, he was trained as a mechanic. After building his successful business, he encouraged his younger brother Santok to emigrate. Unfortunately, after coming to the Central Valley, Santok developed a heart condition that prevented him from working. So, the operation of the Log Cabin Liquor and Gas fell to his wife Retan. For over a decade, she has been behind the counter of the store every day, opening at 6 in the morning and closing at 7 at night. Her husband, Santok, stays at their house, providing care for his four sons. As if the sons still needed care. Two have graduated from prestigious universities and are now financially independent. One is a high school senior, where he is the star quarterback for the Coughlin High School Lions. The youngest has just entered high school, but he may eventually transfer to a specialized Philharmonic music program in Boston. He is a premier woodwind performer. By every indicator, the Singh family has found success among the orange, olive, and lemon groves of Coughlin. An immigrant family's success story in California's Central Valley. It was about 9:30 in the morning on April 18th when the murder occurred. It was a cool, but clear morning in Coughlin. Sometimes Coughlin endures the dense valley fog that envelops everything. It had been foggy last week, but this Monday brought clear, sunny weather. As usual, Mrs. Ratan Singh had opened the store at 6. There was always a line of cars waiting to get gas when she opened. Coughlin is about 60 miles south of Fresno, and a number of Coughlin people made the daily commute up to either Fresno or Clovis. Some even made the longer commute south to Bakersfield. Getting on the road early was important to the commuters, and gas was significantly cheaper at the log cabin. For the area's many farm workers, an early start was also important. Their drive involved fewer freeway miles and more off-the-paved road travel. So, between the farm workers and the daily commuters, the log cabin liquor and gas was a busy place early in the morning. However, things generally slowed down around 8. That is when Santokh Singh would drive over and bring his wife her breakfast. He would also take considerable sums of cash from the liquor store to Coughlin's only bank. Santokh Singh always worried about his trips to the bank. The television was full of stories of armed robberies, carjackings, and murders. However, Coughlin was a peaceful place. There had never been a murder there. That is until April 18th at about 9:30 in the morning. After her husband brought her breakfast and had left for his bank run, Mrs. Ratan Singh experienced a relatively quiet morning at the log cabin liquor and gas. Frida Gutierrez came in to buy her usual case of Bud Light. 18 cans each with about 17 ounces of beer. Enough to last Frida until about 11 o'clock that night. Unfortunately, by then in Coughlin everything was closed, and Frida had no car. To tide her over to morning, Frida turned to hot shots, small bottles of high-proof, low-grade whiskey. Two or three, and then she could go to sleep, waking in time to resupply of the log cabin liquor and gas. Mrs. Singh knew that Frida was an alcoholic whose drinking was a serious risk to her health. Still, she sold Frida what she wanted. Unlike the two supermarkets in Coughlin, Mrs. Singh allowed Frida to buy on credit, having her settle up whenever her welfare check came. Today, as she often did, Mrs. Singh handed Frida a couple of sandwiches from the cooler, saying, "Take these. They were left over from yesterday." Mrs. Singh wished she could do more for Frida, but as her husband Santokh Singh often said, they operated the business to make money. It was the role of the county to provide treatment for Frida's addictions. After all, the county provided her the welfare checks she used to buy the beer. Bert Griffin came in to buy gas and to get his morning coffee and sweet roll. Bert complained that his sciatica nerve had been acting up. He bought a large bottle of extra strength Advil. He also bought 5 bottles of the Hot Shot whiskey. Bert explained that he knew that buying small bottles of whiskey meant paying considerably more per serving than buying a larger bottle. He told Mrs. Singh that he had studied economics in college. He understood that small volume meant higher costs. However, he said, having a large bottle was too much temptation for him. The smaller bottles limited how much he could drink. Not long after Bert, Malcolm Fraser came in to buy $150 worth of lottery tickets. Malcolm did not live in Coughlin. He had driven over from Moore, some 15 or so miles away. Malcolm made the drive, he said, because he had studied the results of the recent lottery drawings. The Log Cabin Liquor and Gas had the greatest percentage of winners for the number of tickets sold in the entire Central Valley. It was worth the drive to buy tickets from such a lucky place. Then about 9:30, Barney Schlafer drove his silver Mercedes SL Roadster into the Log Cabin Liquor and Gas to buy gas and some lottery tickets. Bernard Winslow Schlafer, the third, was a scion of one of the Central Valley's richest and most important families. Many know about Schlafer's Orchard Supply and its 21 locations. You can get anything you want at Schlafer's was the company's motto, encapsulated in a catchy radio jingle. Allied to the Orchard Supply Company was the Valley's largest John Deere tractor dealership. Schlafer's Orange Packing Company, Golden Sun, processed millions of navel oranges every year. Thousands of acres of fruit and nut trees. Largest grower of alfalfa in California. In Coughlin, the Schlafer family owned the only bank, a major trucking firm, and the town's Trunkline Railroad, which connected to the main Union Pacific line. Schlafer Park was the site of Coughlin's 4th of July celebrations, and the Schlafer Pool was where the kids went to cool off in the summer. Bernard Winslow Schlafer, the third, attended a private military school in New York, spent a year at Yale, and then ambled about in Europe for a couple of years. When it came time for him to assume a role in the family's business empire, he refused, wanting to become a television personality instead. Oh, and by the way, his name was now Barney, Barney S. Some may remember Barney, a purple-colored, dinosaur-like children's character from the 1980s. That Barney sang silly songs and gave kids hugs. Certainly, the kind of character most parents would allow in their homes to influence and entertain their children. Well, Barney S., formerly Bernard Winslow Schlafer, the third, was not that kind of television character. His television show was called Seduction. It was designed to shock and to titillate. Yes, there was a pun intended. Seduction was a cross between a talk show and a game show. Contestants were given $5,000 if they could successfully seduce the spouse or the girlfriend of one of their previous friends. Of course, television cameras and Barney's innuendo went along for the ride. Tasteless? Exploitive? Emotionally damaging? Yes, of course. That is the way Barney S. wanted it. Sometimes instead of having contestants, Barney S. would attempt the seduction himself. In his highest ranked show, Barney S. pretended to be a psychologist who seduced both a mother and a daughter. That episode was shot entirely on Barney's yacht, aptly named, of course, Seduce Me. Everyone in Coughlin knew about Barney S., but he brought neither pride nor distinction to the town. Yet, Barney S. had returned to Coughlin. In fact, he had returned many times. So why was Barney S. back in Coughlin on April 18th? The answer is somewhat complicated, and for Barney S., embarrassing. Television shows cost quite a lot of money to produce. Almost all those production costs come up front, before revenues start coming in. Barney S. was the sole producer for his Seduction show. That was great for revenue since he did not have to share them with others. However, it was terrible from a production cost perspective. He had to bear all of the production costs himself. Seduction had finished its third season of shooting, and Barney S. was readying staff and contestants for season 4. Here's where his embarrassing financial situation came into play. He had, finally, received the revenues for season 1. Season 2 was now showing, which meant no revenues yet. Season 3 had finished shooting but was not yet showing. So, no revenues there. Now, it was time for season 4. To make his financial situation worse, the broadcasting company had noticed a slight dip in ratings and had decided to cut what they were willing to pay him for future episodes of Seduction. Bernard Winslow Schlafer, the third, was back in Coughlin, California meeting with his maternal grandmother, asking for her help in funding season 4 of Seduction. Sweet talking granny. Barney S. kept his fan base perpetually informed of his every action through his various social media accounts. Yesterday, he had posted, "Rockin' back with my granny." Sharing stories and making up lies. He shared a picture of him sitting in a rocking chair on his grandmother's back porch. When he stopped for gas on his way back to Los Angeles, he posted, "Getting gas and winning lottery tickets from luckiest place in the valley." He posted a picture of the log cabin liquor and gas in his hometown of Coughlin. It was just a few minutes before 9:30 when Mr. Schlafer pulled his silver Mercedes SL Roadster into pump number 2 at the log cabin liquor and gas. He walked inside and handed the diminutive female clerk a $100 bill. "I'll fill up and then the rest is for lottery tickets. Remember, I only want winners. No losers allowed." Mrs. Ratan Singh began looking for her small calculator. She could not begin issuing the lottery tickets until she knew how much gasoline that he had bought. Probably going to be some weird number of tickets. Maybe some $5 and $2 scratchers along with the lottery numbers. She was looking down, searching for the calculator when she heard the shots. The shooting lasted less than 5 seconds. Now, the log cabin liquor and gas did not have security cameras. Mr. Santok Singh had often talked about putting them in. His brother had already done so at the Shell station, but since Coughlin seemed like such a peaceful place, he had held off, saving the expense. Also, the physical arrangement of the store affected Mrs. Singh's line of vision. The liquor store building where Mrs. Singh stood behind the counter was about 150 feet north from the gas pumps. For Mrs. Singh to see the gas pumps, she had to leave the liquor store building, walk 4 or 5 steps, and then look to her left. So it was that Mrs. Ratan Singh did not actually see the shooting. When she walked out, she saw what she believed was a white car driving away, toward the south, where the only freeway on-ramp was. Still, she was not certain that it was white. Maybe silver or a light tan. She suffered from slow developing cataracts. Her distance vision was often fuzzy. She walked over to the gas pumps where the silver Mercedes SL Roadster was still being fueled. The hose was still pumping gas into the car's tank. Barney S. lay dead next to his expensive, high-performance car. She clicked off the pump and called the police. Coughlin, California has a small police force with only 6 members. 2 officers work the day shift. 2 officers work the evening shift. 1 officer works graveyard, and then there is the chief. On April 18 at 9:30 in the morning, Officer Brent Owens was working traffic, rigorously enforcing the town's 35 miles per hour speed limit. He had just pulled over a large SUV pulling a trailer with 3 all-terrain vehicles on it. He had sighted this driver before. This was a guy who really liked to speed. However, this morning, he was not going to get away with it. As Officer Owens approached the speeder, he was passed by a white sedan driving at a high rate of speed, heading toward the freeway on-ramp. If he had not already been issuing a traffic ticket, he would have chased the white sedan. Nonetheless, he was able to note that the car was being driven by a white male. He also caught sight of 2 characters on the car's license plate. The number 6 and the letter U. Most importantly for the detectives who would eventually solve the case, Officer Owens remembered seeing a barcode sticker on the car's window. The kind that the rental car companies put on their cars. The investigation was led by detectives from the Del Sol County Sheriff's Office. The Coughlin Police Force did not have the resources and experience to conduct a murder investigation. Barney S. was shot while filling his car with gasoline at the log cabin liquor and gas. He was shot in the back from about 50 feet away. He was killed by large caliber, hollow-tipped bullets fired from an automatic weapon. In all, the investigators estimated, 13 bullets were fired, 5 hitting Mr. Schlafer in the upper thorax. While none of the bullets actually struck Mr. Schlafer's heart, they did sufficient damage to the arteries feeding the heart and lungs so that they were not survivable. Mr. Schlafer died, the coroner determined, while awaiting emergency services to arrive at the scene. Coughlin does not have its own ambulance service and none of the volunteer firefighters who were on duty that morning had EMT trauma training. Nonetheless, Mr. Schlafer's wounds were sufficiently serious so that he could not have lived, even had emergency care been immediately available. Chip Dawson was now the executive director of the Professional Firefighters Alliance, the political action committee for California's unionized firefighters. Some would call him a lobbyist, and he certainly was involved in lobbying activities, meeting with individual legislators and testifying before legislative committees. However, Chip Dawson spent more time on public relations events than he did on working with the legislature. In fact, organizing his Honor Among the Flames campaign was really his dominant activity. Nearly every California community now held an Honor Among the Flames event every year, honoring the community's firefighting professionals. The Professional Firefighters Alliance provided media materials, testimonials, awards, text for city council resolutions, and organization for local parades, picnics, and recognition events. The Honor Among the Flames campaign was also an excellent fundraising enterprise for the Professional Firefighters Alliance. Some news analysts have estimated that the organization generated nearly $50 million a year in donations from the campaign. For his leadership, Chip Dawson was now very well paid. Chip and his wife, Gail Ann, now owned a home in Sacramento's fabulous 40s neighborhood, homes originally built in the 1940s by some of California's wealthiest families, but now restored to modern luxury. Chip Dawson was not always Chip. He was baptized in St. Elizabeth's Church as Christopher Ronald Dawson, Jr., the second son of an oilfield roughneck in Derrick, California. Derrick is one of a dozen small towns in Kern County where oil exploration is the principal industry. California had, and still has, substantial reserves of mid-grade petroleum. Ron Dawson, Sr., had begun working in the oil fields when he was 15. He was still working in them when he died at age 55 from an unexpected heart attack. Chris, as he was called then, was still in high school when his father died. The family was only able to survive because John Dawson, Chris's older brother, quit college and began to work in the oil fields. Even though he lived in a house where it was a constant struggle to make ends meet, Chris Dawson believed he was one of Kern County's economic elite. More precisely, one of its preppy elites. Button-down collars, chinos, Italian loafers. Dark dress suit and, of course, a narrow tie. Chris Dawson excelled on the Derrick High School debate team, played tennis well enough to earn a varsity letter, and made the Honor Society. During his senior year, he was elected student body president. No one in Derrick was surprised when he left the Valley for the University of California, Berkeley on a nearly complete scholarship. At Berkeley, he studied philosophy and political science. After graduation, he was accepted into the Hastings College of Law, which is affiliated with the university. As a law student living in San Francisco, Chris Dawson became Chip. He also changed his wardrobe. He was no longer preppy elite. He now wore only hippie grunge. While in law school, Chip completed an internship in city government. That internship created a new, and well-defined, career path for him. He would eventually become a city manager, then a county executive officer, and finally the chief executive of a large, state-level, professional organization. Five Creek has the distinction of being the California city with the highest percent of its residents below the state's poverty line. Nearly 70% of its residents qualify for welfare assistance. It is a city whose citizens are primarily farm workers. Many of its residents came from Mexico without the benefit of papers. They are often called illegal aliens. It was to Five Creek that Chip Dawson came for his non-paid, legal internship. After he completed his bar examinations, Chip Dawson was then hired as the city attorney for Five Creek. 2 months later, when the city manager left, he was named its acting city manager. A year later, he was named the city's permanent city manager. He was just 24. He began a climb up the career ladder, moving on from Five Creek to larger and more affluent cities, eventually becoming the chief executive officer for Pacific County. It was there that the Professional Firefighters Alliance approached him about becoming the organization's executive officer. He was now 43. Gail Ann, and she insisted that it was always Gail Ann but never Gail, had also grown up in Derrick. However, her parents were teachers, not oil field workers. She was not an outgoing girl. Not that she was shy. It was that she had pursuits that did not require others. She wrote music, created mosaics, and ran marathons. Her particular expertise lay in mathematics. Gail Ann graduated from Derrick High and then went to the State College in Fresno, where she earned both her bachelor's and master's degrees. After college, Gail Ann returned to Derrick and accepted a position teaching high school mathematics. She loved teaching. Her favorite classes were the remedial math classes where the students who were struggling were placed. She really loved seeing kids turn from perceived failures to genuine successes. Chip Dawson met the petite blonde teacher when he returned to Derrick to participate in a fun run for our firefighters that his organization had sponsored. He liked getting to as many events as he could. Besides, he had put on a few extra pounds and the various runs helped him feel that he had worked off some of the belly fat. Gail Ann was assisting at the fun run event, sitting at a table, registering the runners. She recognized Chip immediately when he came to her table. He had been the student body president during her sophomore year. Of course, he now had a bit of a paunch and graying hair, but when he started to speak, she knew the voice and mannerisms were the same. When Chip met Gail Ann, he was just months from the divorce of his second wife. He never told Gail Ann why he had divorced, but she instinctively knew that he was not the stay-at-home and be loyal type. A tomcat who loves to prowl. Yet, he had a good sense of humor, and he was pleasant to be with. And he brought the full force of his persuasive personality to an intense courtship. They were married on a cruise to Tahiti and then moved into his home in the fabulous 40s neighborhood, which Gail Ann fully redecorated to her own tastes. It was at a $1,000 a plate fundraiser for a Senate candidate that Barney S. met Gail Ann and Chip Dawson. Cute couple. Politically connected. Now, Barney attended several such fundraising events every year, always pushing for his single issue, the so-called Artistic Freedom Act. Although he adamantly claimed that his television show was not part of the porn industry, he felt a strong kinship to those who were in that business. Many California cities had outlawed pornographic video shoots in their cities. Barney sought the complete freedom to shoot anywhere a producer desired. Hence, the Artistic Freedom Act. Meeting Gail Ann and Chip Dawson was, in Barney's mind, an ideal match. Everyone loved firefighters. A perfect partner for his political goals. He spent most of the evening trying to convert them to his cause. Chip Dawson saw no political merit in Barney's cause. Nonetheless, he was intrigued by Barney's television series. Chip always felt he would be an ideal contestant, one who could seduce any woman, anytime. Barney invited the couple to spend a swingers weekend on his yacht, which he had named Seduce Me. It would be a unique hedonistic occasion just for specially selected couples. And, no, there will not be any cameras involved. A purely private event. Investigators from the Del Sol County Sheriff's Office would later speak with Gail Ann at length about the weekend aboard Barney's yacht. She told them that there were three couples initially aboard the yacht. Gail Ann and Chip. One of Barney's producers and his current girlfriend, whose name was Amy. And Barney S. And a very attractive woman named Lori. Gail Ann told the investigators that she had a chance to talk to Lori, girl to girl. She told them that apparently Lori was a call girl that Barney had brought in from Las Vegas. She did not know Barney or any of the other people aboard the yacht. Just a weekend for which she would be paid. The producer's girlfriend, Amy, became really seasick, and Barney ordered the crew to take the yacht back to port so the couple could get off. Then he told his crew to plot a course toward Catalina Island. The island of romance, of course. For the remainder of the cruise, Chip spent all his energies trying to seduce Lori. To his considerable, puffed up, manly pride, he succeeded. Now, Barney had studied seduction, having witnessed it so often for his television series. He had determined that a seduction was not simply about male, animal predatory aggression. No, seduction was actually about sharing, a pleasurable joint exploration, a couple's communal lovemaking. Gentleness and responsiveness were far more significant, and satisfying, than physical exploitation. Barney S. attempted to seduce Gail Ann. That is, he went through the preliminary motions of attempting a seduction. However, his attempt did not succeed. To be sure, he did not think of that lack of success in terms of failure. No, what it meant is that there could still be a relationship, but it would be one on different terms. Instead of sexual escapades, Barney offered intimate conversation and friendship. His whole demeanor changed. He was no longer an aggressive predator. No. He was a real gentleman. A considerate listener. Like a very good friend. Somebody you could trust. Unlike her husband, Gail Ann shared with Barney what he already knew. Chip's behavior disgusted her. She became angry when she saw her husband acting as he did. Barney S. listened considerately, now knowing that this marriage was not going to last. These were the kinds of hurt that could not be cemented over by a dozen red roses. The gap between teacher and lobbyist was widening by the minute. According to Gail Ann, she never had sexual intercourse with Barney S. But he did become a very close friend. One that she would call up and talk to when she was depressed or whenever Chip left on a trip and she was alone. Just a good friend. A good listener. Someone she could trust. After the swingers' weekend on Barney's yacht, Chip would often become very angry at Gail Ann. Calling her names. Saying things that were designed to hurt and humiliate her. He once hit her really hard. Really hard. Gail Ann was not a large woman. Just 5 feet 4 and 95 pounds. She was a runner who kept herself trim. Chip was a big man. 6 feet and over 200 pounds. Not much of a runner, but an occasional weightlifter. Gail Ann began to consider leaving him. Leaving him for her own safety. Chip Dawson had always been a gun guy. He had inherited his father's guns when he had died. Over the years, he would add a new gun or two. After the weekend on the yacht, he actively acquired more guns, expanding his collection to nearly 50 weapons. He also began to spend more time practicing at the Rifle and Pistol Club. Shooting 2 or 3 evenings a week, especially with his automatic rifles which could easily fire 350 rounds a minute. On April 18th at 9:30 in the morning, Officer Brent Owens was working traffic, rigorously enforcing Coughlin's 35 miles per hour speed limit. He had just pulled over a large SUV pulling a trailer with 3 all-terrain vehicles on it. He had sighted this driver before. This was a guy who really liked to speed. However, this morning, he was not going to get away with it. As Officer Owens approached the speeder, he was passed by a white sedan driving at a high rate of speed, heading toward the freeway on-ramp. If he had not already been issuing a traffic ticket, he would have chased the white sedan. Nonetheless, he was able to note that the car was being driven by a white male. He also caught sight of two characters on the car's license plate. The number 6 and the letter U. Most importantly for the detectives who would eventually solve the case, Officer Owens remembered seeing a barcode sticker on the car's window. The kind that the rental car companies put on their cars. Two days after the murder of Bernard Winslow Schlafer, III, the DelSalle County Sheriff detectives decided to follow up on their most promising lead. Officer Owens had seen what he believed to be a barcode sticker on the window of the white sedan that had sped past him. He said it was the kind of barcode sticker he had seen on rental cars. For Coughlin, the most likely place to rent a car is at the Fresno airport, and that is where the DelSalle detectives headed. At the third rental car company that they visited, they had a hit. A white sedan was rented the day before the murder and then returned in the late afternoon of April 18th. It had a license plate number 6UGT712. A check of the rental records showed that it was rented with a credit card issued by the Professional Firefighters Alliance in Sacramento. The client's name was Christopher R. Dawson. The detectives checked with the airlines but found that no passenger named Christopher R. Dawson had flown into Fresno during the month of April 2017. Then, the detectives checked another possibility. Maybe their person of interest drove to the airport and parked his car there, choosing to use a rental car instead of his own. The parking lots at the Fresno airport had automatic license plate readers. Sure enough, one of the license plate readers identified a 2015 Lexus Sport registered to Christopher R. Dawson. The next step was a drive to Sacramento to interview Christopher R. Dawson. Interviewing a lawyer can often be difficult, especially for a smart, well-prepared lawyer. The only advantage that the DelSalle County Sheriff detectives had was the element of surprise. Christopher Dawson never expected to be interviewed for the murder of Barney S. While he was nervous and sometimes became flustered, Dawson admitted nothing substantial. He was able to point and redirect almost every question that the detectives asked. Nonetheless, he remained their prime suspect. Not enough for an arrest, but still the prime suspect. Yes, he was in the Fresno area for an Honor Among the Flames recognition event. And yes, he had rented a car. There was not enough room in the Lexus Sport for all the stuff necessary for the recognition activities. He had to pick them up from a storeroom at a fire station. No, he had not driven the rental car to Coughlin. No, he was not in the log cabin liquor and gas parking lot at 9:30 in the morning. No, he was in his hotel room participating in a conference phone call. Not enough evidence for an arrest. Still, Christopher R. Dawson remained the detective's prime suspect. However, they had no motive and nothing to directly tie him to the murder scene. And his alibi about being on a conference call was confirmed by his office. Things had reached a standstill until the DelSalle detectives received a call from Gail Ann's attorney. More specifically, her divorce attorney. In her interview with the detectives, Gail Ann talked about how since the swingers' weekend aboard the yacht, Chip has been consumed with jealousy about her friendship with Barney. Consumed with jealousy. Practicing his shooting a couple of nights each week. Using Barney's social media accounts to track his activities. And, finally, about the gun collection that Chip had acquired. Based on her interview, the detectives obtained a search warrant for Chip Dawson's home. There they found an AR-15 with a high-powered scope. Christopher R. Dawson, Jr. was arrested for murder. It took only 3 days for Chip Dawson to be granted bail on a $30,000 bond and released with an ankle bracelet tracking his movements. With the ankle bracelet monitoring him, he was allowed to return to his home in Sacramento. On July 2, 2017, Chip Dawson's ankle bracelet stopped pinging. The device had been designed to ping every 15 seconds, indicating that it was still attached and functioning. Immediately, the Del Sol detectives monitoring Chip's activities requested that the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office rearrest him. When the Sacramento officers arrived at Chip's home, they found that the ankle bracelet had been removed and rewired. Neighbors reported seeing a number of visitors to Chip's home. The detective surmised that one of those visitors helped Chip remove the bracelet and then rewired it so it would continue to ping when unattached. They also surmised that Chip Dawson escaped with the assistance of one of these visitors. No one knew where he was. On August 8, the Coast Guard reported finding a small speedboat floating aimlessly in the marine shipping lane off Ventura, about 30 miles from the California mainland. No one was aboard and the boat's gas tanks were empty. All the boat's life jackets were still aboard. When they ran the registration, they found that the speedboat belonged to Christopher R. Dawson. Detectives surmised that he was given a ride to the Ventura Harbor where the boat was kept. They believe that Chip then drove the boat out some considerable distance, and, leaving the engines running, jumped into the Pacific and began to swim away. Then, they surmised, he dived under the water and drowned. Still, he could have gotten away. But a board of inquiry found that possibility unlikely, and declared him dead. Thank you. 3 years later. Bernard Winslow Schlafer, the third, was buried in a non-religious ceremony at the Schlafer family mausoleum in Coughlin, next to his grandfather and an uncle he never knew. During the service, no mention was made of his Barney S. identity, his television show, or his infamous yacht. A member of the Schlafer family is tasked with placing flowers on the grave of each family member on their birthday. Other than that pro forma recognition, no one in the family seems to mourn for him. The Professional Firefighters Alliance has changed its name and has hired a new executive director. The Honor Among the Flames recognition program also continues with a new name, Heroes in the Flames. As the site of Coughlin's only murder, the log cabin liquor and gas has not fared well. Folks used to drive for miles to buy their lucky lotto tickets from the store. Now a cloud of evil karma seems to cover the place. Even local regulars like Frida Gutierrez and Bert Griffin no longer stop by. Ratan and Santok Singh have decided to sell the building. Within months it will be demolished, to be replaced by a new Dollar General store. Finally, Gail Ann has returned to Derrick and to her teaching career. She now teaches remedial mathematics to middle grade students, and she loves her work. She no longer uses the Dawson last name, and she requests that we honor her personal privacy. She continues to run in marathons and has adopted a new dog. Murder at the Gas Pump. An original audio story for Appaloosa Radio.
Appaloosa Springs Audio Theater is a creative collaboration whose purpose is to write, produce, and share original story content through webcast radio experiences.